Do you want some biscuits?
No.
You sure?
Yeah. No. I just had tea and biscuits before coming here.
You know, it's that Indian thing. Have toffee.
Hello, and welcome to Podcast for Change, hosted by me, Reese Andor Mohammed. Change is not something that happens in isolation. Change is present everywhere. It is constantly in motion, in the small moments, in the big moments, in the transition moments. Change is in the everyday encounter, and this podcast aims to document those moments where change happens through conversations with very different, very incredible people who each have their own unique stories to tell. This podcast documents those conversations and shares it with the wider world.
What should I say in my introduction?
In this episode, I speak to Priyanka Akkar, one of my classmates. They came over and we sat on my bed drinking tea with my cat, and we had a conversation about our identities. We speak about our similarities and differences, me as a South African Indian and Priyanka being from India. We talk about identity politics and language and family. We talk about ourselves, as well as the broader contexts around us. It ended up being such an interesting conversation, and I'm very excited for you to listen to it.
What introduction do you want? I'm Priyanka, I'm from India, Maharashtra to be specific, and I am studying Southern Urbanism here in Cape Town. It's been 3 months since I came.
Yeah, and that's how I met Priyanka. We're doing the same degree, same masters, which is very interesting. And we bonded a lot over being Indian.
Yeah.
But I'm fifth generation South African Indian, and obviously Priyanka's from the homeland, from the motherland.
Yeah. So my status, Maharashtra is beside Gujarat. And you said because you are from Gujarat. Maharashtra is right beside Gujarat, and Maharashtra and Gujarat doesn't quite get along.
Really?
No, they don't. Maharashtra and Gujarat had a big fight over Mumbai. So who gets Mumbai? And
is that back when it was still Bombay, or is it still now?
It's during 1960s.
Okay.
Yeah, because there are so many Gujarati businessmen in Maharashtra, and of course Marathi also. But then Mumbai is multilingual. Mumbai has people from all over India.
I mean, it's a massive city.
It's a mega city.
Yeah.
Mm. So that is why Gujarat wanted Mumbai and Maharashtra also wanted Mumbai. Maharashtra got Mumbai. And it was a big struggle, a labor's movement in 1960.
Which
is why Maharashtra and Gujarat are still kind of, you know, they don't see eye to eye,
no.
I would say. And now our prime minister is from Gujarat, and the biggest businessman in India is also from Gujarat, Reliance. Ambani.
You might
have heard of him. Yeah. And so every time Maharashtra loses on a project or whatever is happening in Maharashtra, people are still like, they're taking the revenge of Mumbai.
Really?
People still connect it to Mumbai and how, like, the Prime Minister and this businessman, billionaire, they're conspiring against Maharashtra.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, that's some history of our states.
It's really interesting that even though I think my family's been here for over 100 years, we still kind of identify by where we came from in India. I guess in the grand scheme of things, like 100 and something years isn't that much, but it's long enough for us to not have any ties really in India.
Correct.
It's So then the Gujarat and Maharashtra, all of that beef happened past
after
us.
You.
Yeah.
Yes, after you.
Way
left,
after.
After independence, in fact. Like, it started in that period, independence period, because after Britishers left, we had to do a division of states in India, and we were doing linguistic division. That's how the states came about.
Oh, okay.
So that's why Maharashtra, Marathi, Gujarat, Gujarati, Tamil Nadu, Tamil, Kannada, Karnataka. So that's how India is. The administration in India is based on the languages.
Okay.
And Mumbai was multilingual. Mumbai wasn't really Marathi. Of course, it is in a Marathi state, but Mumbai is multilingual. So all these big cities, mega cities, all of them are multilingual, right? Because they have people from all over the country. Yeah.
It's so interesting how that division is according to languages, because obviously, well, I've heard that India, like, there's the big languages, but also the subsects and the subculture,
yeah,
and the sub-languages and the
dialects. It goes on dividing itself.
So it's like, where do you start dividing by, according to, like, where you... It's like, I guess that shows how imaginary the borders are, because you need to figure out where one language starts and one language ends and what counts under this umbrella, and because there's so many dialects.
Yeah, and same for identity also then. What is your identity? Which identity are you talking about? Where does one identity end and the other begins? Currently, I think, if I'm not wrong, I think there are some 28 official languages in India. Because linguistic division of states, right? Each state has their own language. But each state has their own official language. Like, if I speak for Maharashtra, our official language is Marathi. But Marathi is just the dominant language in Maharashtra. There are so many other dialects of Marathi. There are so many other languages which are not like Marathi. So then that language just becomes a dominant way of things in each state. And people do fight for their own languages and their own dialects.
Isn't that how Bangladesh came to be? Is it Bangladesh?
Yes, Bangladesh. Yeah. So after independence, Bangladesh is on one side of India and Pakistan is on another side of India. But after independence, when India and Pakistan were separated, Bangladesh and Pakistan were together, Pakistan. But Bangladesh, their main language is Bangla. And they love their language. They hold on to that identity very dearly. And Pakistan tried to impose Urdu on them. And that's where their struggle of independence started. So in, I think, 1972, they got independence from Pakistan, and India helped Bangladesh in doing that. And that was purely...
Because India also has beef with Pakistan that is separate to that, I guess.
Mm. And yeah, that is why their independence struggle has emerged from language, because they wanted Bangla as their official language and they did not want Urdu to be imposed on them. So they fought for it, they died for it. I think World Linguistic Day, Language Day, is 21st February, I guess. Something like that. No, not 21st. Oh, yeah, I think 21st February. So that is... that's inspired by Bangladesh.
Wow.
And I was there in Bangladesh on Language Day. And there's a huge, huge, huge celebration of Language Day in Bangladesh. Like we celebrate Independence Day, they celebrate Language Day. It's so amazing to be there to see that. There were bookstalls and theater and... I don't know, songs, literature, basically all sorts of literature and arts. Art was all around the city, everywhere.
Wow.
In schools, colleges, universities, streets, public spaces, everywhere. Everywhere, everyone was like, today's our Language Day.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So interesting to see how, I guess, in different spaces, the different things that constitute people's
identity. Yes.
But also, it shows how language... so important. And then you think back in history and how there's different types of colonization, and one form of it is, like, I remember reading about the different types of colonization and looking at the Islamic and Arab colonialism, and I don't know, I think the sources I used, I might be wrong, but it said the differences between European and Arab one is European was much more forceful, but then Arab colonization was more assimilation, which is violence in its own way, because you slowly transition everything, and then that makes the local languages seem inferior, and then slowly like that, it kind of swallows it up until it's all gone.
Got it.
And it's violent. It's a form of violence. And then you hear about Bangladesh and how much of the identity is tied to language. It makes me think about South Africa here, where a lot of the uprisings were around the student uprisings. We just had recently, on the 16th of June, that's Youth Day, and there was a protest against the implementation of Bantu education, which was also forcing people to learn in Afrikaans. So much is tied to the colonization. So much of it is tied to language.
Yeah. So we also look at Hindi in India. We also look at Hindi from that lens. Hindi imposition is a thing. So the current government wants to, all the governments have been trying to impose Hindi on non-Hindi speaking states, and there are a lot of non-Hindi speaking states, not the whole of Northeast, South India, of course Gujarat, Maharashtra also, and all of these states in their own capacity are resisting that. So like when I come here out, when I was in Bangladesh also, and now when I'm in South Africa also, I see people usually confuse India with Hindi. Like India means Hindi, but then that is not true. That is something that we are all fighting for, that no, India doesn't mean Hindi.
India
doesn't. Like, my grandmother, she's not fluent in Hindi. My mother is also not fluent in Hindi. Not everyone speaks Hindi, but people know Hindi. A lot of people in Maharashtra, a lot of them know Hindi. But if you go below Maharashtra and South India, then you'll find lots and lots of people who have no idea, cannot speak a word in Hindi, because they were not raised in
the
Hindi.
What are the dominant languages in the South?
So like for Karnataka, it's Kannada. Tamil Nadu, it's Tamil. For Kerala, it's Malayalam. Telugu, Tulu. Then for Andhra Pradesh and Telangana, it's Telugu, Tulu. Yeah. So these
so
are the
languages.
There's so many languages. South Indian languages are so, so, so beautiful. Very beautiful language. Like Tamil is my favorite language. I think in my previous birth, I think I was Tamil, because I feel so close to that language, but I don't understand a word.
Oh my god.
But I feels like, you know, I know this language
though.
But I don't know this language.
That's beautiful. I guess I always get kind of frustrated, or sometimes get frustrated, because from my mother's side, the language stopped at me and my brother. Because it's even in South Africa, where the Indians come from, we have our own subsects that I think you haven't heard of. Like, on my dad's side, I'm Memon. So I think the dominant ones are Memon, Surti, Calvert, Cockney. I think I'm forgetting one. Possibly I'm forgetting one. But there's such divide, and that's just with the Muslims. Like, that's just the Muslims. And there's such divides. And the Surtis come from Surat. The Memons are from Porbandar. The Cockneys are from the Konkani coast.
Okay.
And the Kolpits, I'm not 100% sure. But there's such divides between them. Like, I think Urdu-speaking people also, there's a dialect, and then there's that hierarchy. So my father's Memon and my mother's Surti, and Surtis are considered less. And then Memons have a stereotype, there's a stereotype against Memons, they're considered to be stingy and rich. Like everyone has their things against everyone else. And so Memon is a language. Like the Surtis speak Gujarati.
Huh.
I think that's a Gujarat.
Do they still speak origin. Gujarati?
My mother can. My mother can speak Gujarati and she can speak Urdu. And I always ask her, like, why didn't you teach me? And she looked at me and she said, I didn't have anyone to talk to. Because she, that generation as well, they lived together as whole family units. Mm. My father, when he was in Cape Town once, because he lived all over the country, so sometimes if he's around, he'll take me to an area that he used to live in and show me where he lived. And he took me and my brother, and it was his family. I think it's my aunt, him, my two uncles, his third uncle. So five siblings and the two parents and I think his grandmother, they lived in this two-bedroom house. So everyone was close. And my mother also lived with her uncles and her grandparents and everything. And everyone families. Yeah. And that generation grew up a lot more with that. So during apartheid, and then post-apartheid is when kind of the nuclear family started, when capitalism hit. Mm. Us in that way, where it became more households, like parents, children.
Correct.
And so because of that, they lived with the older generations. My mother grew up speaking Gujarati, and she can speak some Urdu. So when we watch Bollywood movies, she can understand. We watched one, Satya Pe Satya. And it's young Amitabh Bachchan. And we tried so hard to find a copy of it, and we couldn't, and we found one on YouTube, and that only had a few subtitles. We were sitting and she's translating the whole way, and that's 50s. I can't remember, I think it's I'm not sure what language I was speaking. Was it Hindi? Satya Pe Satya. So I don't know how, she was translating that as well for me.
Because
it's close together.
Because then if she knows Urdu, it's so much easier for her to understand Hindi.
It borrows from each other.
Yeah, all of these languages, in fact, Marathi also, I think your mom would understand a lot of Marathi also.
Really?
Because that's how I understand Gujarati.
Oh, okay.
Because these are all Indo-Aryan set of languages. So if you go to South India, then that's the Dravidian languages. But these are Indo-Aryan languages. They come from Sanskrit. And I don't know, I'm not sure which other languages, but that is how there is a lot of resemblance in all these languages. I do understand Gujarati to a certain extent. She can also understand Marathi to a certain extent. Neighboring states, you see, so definitely we share.
Yeah, those similarities. Mm. But I always, when we're on her family, I feel so sad because she'll speak with her aunties, she'll speak Gujarati, they'll have, when you speak more than one language, it's that mixture of languages, and I can only pick up bits.
Mm.
It's so frustrating because I feel like I have this language, these languages that are in my blood, but it's like locked away. And I think that when you said you feel like connected to
Tamil. But I do not have any connections to Tamil. Like my family, my family is Marathi, and for like generations we've lived in the same town.
Oh wow.
Yeah, there's no history of migration that I know of in my family.
So that's
something. It's like my grandfather, his grandfather, all of them have lived in the same town till my father's generation, and now we are moving out. So when me and my sister, we are moving out, I think are we the first people to move out? In my family, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Nobody else has moved out. But all of them have been staying in the same town for generations after generations.
I think you mentioned that your town, there's a science base, a research base?
No. Not there's an aircraft thing in my town. HAL, Hindustan Aeronautics Limited. And there's also Air Force Camp in my town.
Okay. Where are those people from?
From all over India. Then there's a township in my town, but the township for us is not like your township. Township is just so in my town the township is for employees of HAL.
Okay.
Employees of this company. So they all stay together. That's a township.
Okay.
Township of HL Township.
Okay.
So there you'll find people from all over India. And then the common language for us becomes Hindi. Because people from all over India.
Even as a Marathi state.
Even when there is a Marathi state. In my specific town. And that's how I'm fluent in Hindi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
When was the base established?
Wow, you know, that's a really good question. I don't know, but it was somewhere when my grandfather was young.
Oh, okay. Mm. I remember it was more stories recent than that, but that's a while.
Yeah, that's a while after independence.
Oh wow. Because I was gonna ask about how if that impacted, because your family's been there for generations, but I suppose they've been there for a while, so I think it shaped. The way it shaped the town is far before you.
Yes, yes. And then I studied in the township. So there's a school for HL employees, but they also had a quota for the villagers. So that's how I got into that school.
Oh yeah.
And that school, our common language was Hindi, which is why I know Hindi well.
Oh, okay. It's so interesting the way that you have, because for us, I think the languages are similar, the African languages, just I can't speak them. But yeah, I think because the divides were so recent. But actually, if your common language was Hindi, I guess it's the same for us, but it's just English.
Yes.
So it feels very different listening to you, but I guess it isn't really, just because I can only speak English. If I could speak one of the African languages, then I suppose my experience would be similar to yours.
But you do speak African languages, don't you?
I speak Afrikaans.
Oh.
Yeah, that's it. I'm a lot more fluent in Afrikaans than a lot of people I know are.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know, some people are just better with languages, I guess. Okay. Because we studied it and... I studied hard, but also moving, I think a lot of people don't care about Afrikaans because they see it as only a South African language, and they see it as something that you're not going to use. But coming to Cape Town especially is when I really valued knowing Afrikaans, and I think that's why, even though it's not like I watch Afrikaans shows or anything, I think my brain has subconsciously kind of held onto it, because now when we went to places like Sisigul House, where there are locals who speak Afrikaans, because the misconception, I think, is that Afrikaans is a white language, when it isn't. It's a mixture of different languages. It came with the slaves here, all the mixture of languages. The first written Afrikaans was in the Arabic script.
Oh, is that so?
Like the first recorded written Afrikaans, it's written in the Arabic script.
Oh.
And so moving here and seeing the community, the Afrikaans we learn in school is the, I guess it's the white Afrikaans version. It's a very formalized version. And so I think it's called Kombase Afrikaans, where it's the ordinary people speaking it. And I really found the value of knowing even the Afrikaans, school Afrikaans, I've really found the value in knowing that.
Because
then you can, when you know people's language, you can really speak to them, I guess. Or generally I've kind of given up with responding in Afrikaans. Sometimes I do, but I've noticed that I can understand it a lot more. So I tell people, you can speak in your language, I understand. And then I'll try to just... I'll speak English and I'll try and find some translations. But it makes a difference. And being here in Cape Town, where I guess Cape Town is the point where it all happened first. And I think we did that in class, where Cape Town was the point of contact with the Europeans. And it's where slaves were brought...
Correct.
So I guess that's also part of it, that point, that little hub and point of contact, and where Afrikaans comes from as well, partly.
Correct.
I might be making it up, but I think there's some, like, my historical knowledge isn't completely
on point,
but it's there.
It's there.
It's there.
You see things. I know, same for me.
I like picked up little bits of information, and whatever retained in my head is what retained in my head.
Also, that I've not tried to learn history. I have like the struggle for Mumbai and all of that. I've read it, but I don't remember.
Yeah,
I don't remember any of that. It's just feeling. I picked up the feelings, the intuitions, and that has stayed with me.
And it's important. It's important for that knowledge and feel. I guess the feelings as well, because the archives can't really document feeling. There's so much emotion involved in it, in struggle in general.
Yeah.
I guess that's one way history is preserved as well.
Yeah. I am so excited to see Durban, because there's so many Indians. And the things that I've heard about Durban, like the weather, for example.
Oh, yes.
Makes perfect sense.
It's so much better.
Indians would prefer Durban or Cape Town or any other city in South Africa. It makes so much sense to me. I think Durban is very similar to India in a lot of ways, from what I've heard. And now that there is a huge Indian community there, I think it's a lot more Indian. But also, I recently heard from someone about the identity, political identity of being an Indian in South Africa. And because the apartheid, the category of Indian, and it's not just for people from India, but Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, Nepal, all of them are Indian.
Oh, yes! So I haven't even thought about that.
She was talking about it, and that was so interesting. She's like, so when you say Indian, that means you're from India, but like Indians here who are like 5th generation, 6th generation, 7th generation, they don't really feel any connection to India, but they're categorized as Indians in South Africa, so that then the identity becomes political, and it brings so many emotions that such a, I don't know, identity conflict kind of a situation. And that was something I don't think I thought about it.
But I guess also the conflict in India, between India and Pakistan, even, like, imagine you're from Bangladesh, and from Pakistan, and the identity politics, and the political, and then you come here, you fight for your independence, you fight so hard for your independence, and you come here, you leave your country, and then you get Indian here.
To again be labeled as Indian. Yeah, so yeah, that's what happened yesterday. when I was going back, I was talking to the cab driver, and he asked me, where am I from? And I said, India. And he said, he's also from India. I was like, oh, really? Interesting. Where are you from? Where from India? And then he was like, Delhi. I was like, oh, you're from Delhi. And you know Delhi? He's like, yeah, I know Delhi. And then he was like, no, actually, I'm from Bangladesh. I'm from Dhaka. I'm like, okay. This has happened 2 to 3 times with me.
Oh, wow.
That people first tell that they're Indian, and when I tell them I'm also an Indian, I'm from India, and I'm freshly out of India, then they reveal that they're actually from Bangladesh to me. So that was an interesting conversation with him. He's like, do you have a boyfriend?
Oh.
I'm like, no.
It's okay, always then, the...
Yeah.
At this point, you gotta just... No, but... It's so... I feel so bad sometimes because I'm naturally wary. Well, I'm naturally wary of men in general. Mm. But especially if you're going to a corner shop where men from India, men from Pakistan, from Bangladesh, I'm naturally wary. And it makes me feel problematic. But then when I am nice, it always happens. They do that. They try their luck with you.
Yeah, he
and
also
it's like,
did...
Why? It makes me feel so bad. It makes me feel kind of racist to be so wary and on my guard. But then it happens constantly. It's really funny, though. It's without fail. No matter where I am in the world, I'll bump into someone from India, Pakistan.
And they're
like,
hitting
I'm not
on
sure.
You.
Nope, it's always the... Where are you from? I said, South Africa. Oh, and when I say, like, the pauses, I'm... every time the exact same pauses.
Mm.
It's like, oh.
Processing.
And where are your parents from?
Ah,
it's like, they're from South Africa. Oh.
Doesn't make sense.
Your grandparents are South
How
African.
Far are you
oh.
to go in?
And then it's like the longest pause. It's a, oh.
Okay, now how do I...
But you look in there.
Yeah.
It's that, and then I do the whole, yeah, they moved here over 100 years ago, fifth generation. Everywhere in the world that I've been and I've encountered an Indian man, it's always men.
It's
also,
always
it's
men
always the men. They you encounter an Indian man, they do the exact same thing.
Really?
It's so... I guess... A more naive version of me would be, oh, they're really happy to see someone that looks like them. But then when they're hitting on you part, it's like you're trying to find yourself a, like a wife.
Got it. This guy also, he was also trying to hit on me yesterday. Yeah. And then he tried to, like, touch my head.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then I was like, good night.
Why are men like
we
this?
We are done here.
Why are men? Why are men?
Men everywhere.
Men.
It's fine now I kind of, you know, I don't take it too hard. I enjoy that
I still feel, I don't know, I still feel kind of problematic sometimes when I'm afraid of men, especially when I'm afraid of people of color men, because it makes me feel like there's something wrong with me. But then it's also the realities of being in a feminine body in South Africa has got one of the highest gender-based violence rates in the world. And the reality of being in the body that looks like mine is you have to be scared of men.
Yeah.
Because men are so dangerous and violent. And I know India's also got a really bad gender-based violence
problem. Very, very bad.
Like a horror story.
It's a horror show there, yeah.
I guess that kind of... It's brought here.
Yeah, of course, wherever we go, we'll... Ambedkar has once said that when Indians go out of India, caste will become a world's problem. And that's so true. Wherever we go, we will take all of this toxicity with us.
I guess that is what happened with us here, with the divisions. Because I can't speak for non-Muslim Indians in South Africa, because I just don't know. But even us, with our divisions, it's a form of the caste system that we brought here.
Yeah.
And it's lasted till now.
Oh, this person on Instagram, I don't know their full name, but something Naidu. They talk about caste in South African Indians and food and all of that. I hope to meet them someday. I think you're the one who shared their profile with me. I'll show you that person. Something Naidu.
Something Naidu, that's like a massive
correct
population.
Yeah.
That's like Sing Sing. Patel.
Correct.
We are everywhere.
Indians are everywhere, dude. Indians are everywhere. I'm just so surprised every time. So I met someone in Mumbai. And this person was an Indian from Cameroon.
Oh.
And
it's
like,
feels
this is the
so
first
random
time.
Sometimes.
It's so random. Like, I knew there exists a country called Cameroon, but this is the first time I'm meeting someone from Cameroon.
And I don't know
anything about this country. But imagine in this age of technology, information, knowledge, where everything is at the click of your whatever, but still I know so little, almost nothing about this country. But someone from India long, long back, maybe 150 years ago, went there, settled there. Like, how, if I don't know about this country, how did they know? So that's what
it's so interesting.
That's what I ask you also, right?
Yeah.
How did they find out South Africa?
Yeah.
At that time.
I think from when you met me, I think you've been so interested in how we ended up here and why. And because of, like, I always had an idea, but I went to go ask my parents as well. It's like, how did this happen? For me, other countries, I have no idea. I don't know how Indians ended up everywhere. Like, I have no idea.
Yes.
But I know South Africa, throughout the world, like, if you read old books and stuff, like, no, well, not old, old, but, like, late 19th century, even early 20th century, it's from white authors, European authors, British authors especially, there's so many references to South Africa. Like, they'll speak about another character, they'll reference South Africa, they'll reference gold, they'll mention something. And I think South Africa, at that point, even before apartheid started, was seen as this new place of resources and wealth. And a lot of people were coming here to escape conditions there, I guess, looking for a new life. The person... It was really... I think we when we went to the aquarium on our field trip, that's where the first time I heard, like, when they were giving, like, South African history, that Jan van Riebeeck, who we were told is the dude who found South Africa, and came here and was the one who set up the refreshment station. We always knew about him, but he was... you know, seen as this figure.
Correct.
At the aquarium with those, with the presentation, is the first time we heard that he was kind of a bum. I'm South African.
Correct.
And that's the first time I heard that he was just, he was a disgraced officer who saw a chance, and he took that chance, and now he's remembered as, like, there's a school here named after him. Correct. It's crazy.
It's always like that.
Yeah.
I never understood those things. Even when I was reading in school, that this person found India, this person found America. And it's like, what do you mean he found it?
I mean, I guess he found it, like, he arrived and saw it, but he didn't discover it. Like,
discover, that's
yeah,
the
that's
one
the
they
thing,
use.
You're finding and discovering are two different things.
But then, so what?
Yeah. And then I think that's also, like... Van Riebeeck being a disgraced officer actually makes so much sense, because there's this new country, this new area, you see an opportunity, you're, like, disgraced wherever you come from, so you say, okay, cool, I'm gonna set up a refreshment station here. Oh, and look, there's all these locals to bully over here and to take advantage of all these resources here, because we've used up our resources back in our country. Look at all these resources here.
Correct.
So then it started as the refreshment station, and then the Afrikaner, well, the Dutch ran away from the British here. They went on their great trek into the country. That's how they ended up everywhere else. Who doesn't run away from the British? The Dutch weren't great, but the British. And then they found the gold in Joburg, and that's when everything... And I think that's what happened. That's with the gold rush, is when, because then the Brit, a lot of the Europeans, that's when they were flocking over here. And then because of that, they needed laborers, and because of all the resources, and that's when the first wave of people of color came, the slaves from Malaysia, Indonesia, from India. No, I think the Malays and Indonesians came to Cape Town, and when the sugarcane plantations, that's when the Indians got to Durban as slaves. And then I think it took a couple of years, and I guess South Africa, it was a new... Like, it was, like, new in the Western world. So things were still developing, growing. And I guess people, from what my mother said to me, they sent word back to India that there were more opportunities here.
How?
On the boat. It wasn't so far back. There were boats.
But still, dude, how many days it took for them to reach?
No, it must have taken months.
Imagine.
But things like migration, it happened slowly.
Correct. That is also there.
Slowly. It wasn't that far back. They had boats. They had their messages.
But
and the families, I think, they, like, one, two people heard. They heard, oh, there's these opportunities, and a few people, I think, went, and then they sent word. Because it didn't all happen at once. Migration takes time. And then that's how people came. I know my great grandfather, I think he, I'm not sure when his family got here, but his wife, my mother's grandmother, she came from India like as part of an arranged marriage.
Okay.
So I think that's when they didn't just leave India and finish there. We don't have ties now, but they still did have. And so that's also crazy. Is that's still that Indian system of arranged marriages. She left her whole family, everything, to come here for an arranged marriage.
Yeah.
Like, it's still, that's still, it wasn't like a complete separation. I think, and I think with all the other countries as well, now, because it's been so many years, there's a bit more of a separation. But then there was still that.
So was your grandmother like writing letters back to India?
How I don't think my grandmother, but I honestly, I don't know. I think you're the first person that's ever asked me these things.
See, so because of arranged marriages, women have been migrating in India since forever, I think. Like, if you take case of my aunt, my father's sister, so she is married in Kolhapur, that is like 12 hours away from my place. And now she's married for, let's say, almost 30 years. She's been married for almost 30 years. And now we have phones and everything.
Yeah.
But back then when she was married, I remember I was really small at the time. And she used to write letters. And there was one phone in our entire neighborhood.
Oh, wow.
So one family had a telephone in our entire neighborhood. And that's where she would call.
Okay.
And then then they will send us a message that you have a call from your daughter, and then all of us will go there and stand in a queue in front of that phone, and each one will get few seconds to talk with her because it was super expensive. And then she is married into a family, into a city, into a region which has a very different culture from ours.
Still in India.
Still India, still in Maharashtra.
Oh, it's still in Maharashtra. Oh, yeah.
It's a 12-hour journey.
Oh, wow.
To reach there by bus, by road. And the culture is very, very different over there. And so, like, when I was growing up, I have been to her place once and always wondered, how did she adjust over there? Because the culture is different. Everything there, their cooking is different, the way of worshipping is different, the dialect, the language is different, although they also speak Marathi, but the dialect is very different from ours. So, and she cannot just get up and call her family every day. So imagine being like a 21-year-old girl migrating to a whole new
world. And that was all the girls' life.
Everything.
Like all the girls, that was their life. That's what they had to do. Until you are that in marriage age, you're your family's, and then you get handed off to another family.
And then that becomes your world. But then when I think about it, because I have been traveling everywhere, and I have lived in places which is far, far away from my home, I always think about her. Wherever I go, I always think about her. That how did she do it at that time?
Which is why I'm asking
you all of these questions.
Yeah.
How did your grandmother do it? How was she talking to her parents, her siblings, her world, her entire world? How were they communicating?
Though
she used to write letters to us, I remember. And then we would also write letter to her, a reply. But it was surveilled. We cannot just write anything the letter because her in-laws might find it.
Oh, yes.
Even when you're talking.
Oh, yeah. So then they had to keep it all. Even maybe that's also why none of us. And it's till today that Indian, like, it's an Indian mentality. It's from the older generations. You keep all your problems to yourself, to your own family.
Especially women. Even now, I'm wherever I went. And right now, I'm having problem with my housing and I'm having problem at the university, whatever problems I have. I'm not sharing it with my parents. They don't know any of it and they've never known any of it. Like, whatever me and my sister are doing, my parents don't know. Like, my sister had a surgery a few days back.
Whoa.
And she told us after coming out of the operation theater. And it's like, okay, my knee surgery is done.
Yo, and none of you even knew she was getting it.
We knew that she's going to get it, but she did not tell us when exactly, because she didn't want us to interfere. Oh, she has her system. She has her. She has everything that she needs. She's built it.
That's
she doesn't
another
want
thing
us
we do it. And that's
because
the thing. Why you?
Interfering.
We keep everything to. But I will say here, my parents' generation. I think it started with them. The breaking that cycle, even though not completely, and it's only really now that my family start like. They're starting to talk a bit more openly about mental health. Because my dad's side of the family, we have really bad mental health problems. And growing up, I think we didn't... You know, when the psychologist asks if you have a family history, I say, I don't know. Or I'll say, I think I've said no, because I just didn't know that all my cousins were having similar experiences. And it's only now that it's kind of starting to come out and they're learning to be a bit more open. But it's still that idea. Every family keeps their problems to themselves. Because everyone else will interfere.
Everyone else will
interfere. And it's not just to interfere because you're trying to help. It's also because it becomes a scandal. And that whole...
And judgment.
That whole culture. The judgment culture. Everyone minds each
other's
business.
Everyone's talking about... And then everyone's talking about you. We don't want that.
Yeah.
Because we also gossip about others.
I will be open about it. I've got that Indian in me.
Yeah,
I like gossiping.
I like gossiping too. Like me and my sister, we're not very close to each other. We hardly talk to each other. There are only two occasions where we talk to each other. That is if there's something wrong in my family. And there's always something wrong. So those functional things. And if we have a gossip about our relatives. They're like, do you want to gossip? Like, yes, of course. And then we call each other. This happened, that happened, that happened. And then we're trying to always also remember what has happened before.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, bring both of our knowledge together. About this particular...
Even my mother and I, when we don't
and
call that afternoon, but when we do call, we'll spend over an hour.
Just
a whole part of
everyone.
That will be gossiping and telling stories and what this one did and what
yeah,
that one did.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I'm not going to lie. I'm not in a hurry to lose those habits.
No,
I know gossiping's bad, but yeah, listen,
that.
There's some joys in my life. There's a few joys in my life. And gossiping is one of them.
Yeah.
But I don't know about you, but even now, like, with us talking so openly about being Indian and the difficulties and also the toxicity, I get scared or I feel guilty or nervous about sharing it with the wider world because there's so many stigmas against. So it's so nice to talk to other Indians about, because we don't get to talk about it. So it's so interesting. It's so nice to talk about the problems, but because there's so much racism and stigma, it's like I'm scared to be more open about these things because it's like giving people ammunition to be racist against us. But the thing is, the stereotypes, they come from somewhere. The stereotypes about Indians having strict families, about men being creepy, all of that, comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
It's just that I feel guilty about speaking about it to the wider world, because it's then like, okay, then that's another excuse to hate Indians. But we're all human.
But for certain things, we should be called out, I think.
Definitely.
Also, I feel weird talking about our experiences as Indian, because, like, what do you mean by Indian? It's such a broad category. So, in South Africa, Indian means...
Oh, yeah, that's
something
bad as well.
Entirely something else. But in India also, within India, we're not talking about being Indian.
Yeah.
Because there are... I don't know what is being Indian. It's a diverse country, and
it's a South Asian experience.
There's one way to put it, that it's diverse, but it's also highly unequal and segregated, and it goes on. The segregation. I don't know, you're Indian, then which state are you from? Like, I'm a Maharashtrian. So that is another identity. And then within Maharashtra, then my caste location. I don't know, there's so many things that divide us. And in India, when we are talking, I'm talking with my friends, we will talk from those positions, right? Sometimes we're talking from our caste positions. And people in my caste have these specific traits. Or, I don't know, Marathi people have the specific traits. But now when I I speak on behalf of India, and if I'm talking any, I don't feel like I can make a single statement that covers all of India.
I guess that's a form of erasure that happened here. Because that also, it doesn't make sense, because when you're born, you have, like, in the country, your census, you're recorded as something. And like you said, if you're from South Asia, you are Indian.
Correct.
And India, here it's like becomes a race. But India's a country in South Asia.
Yeah.
I guess for the rest of the world, India is, in being Indian is, if you're from there, that's where you're from. But here it was turned into a race. And that's a complete erasure of all the other places, the countries outside of India, like around India, but also within India. Because within India is, I guess, it's your nationality, but race?
No, there are so many races in India. Yeah. There is racism inside India also. We are racist to our fellow Indians also. So that is what I'm saying. I do not know. I do not have a single statement that covers the entire India. Mm. We are racist towards our fellow Indians. We are casteist. We have so many things. I mean,
I remember when I was in high school, one of my friends, she said her parents will not like me and do not like me. And I'm like, but I'm also Indian. And she, like, is it because I'm Muslim? She said, yeah, but also because I'm not Hindi.
Ooh.
So even if I was a Hindu, because I'm Gujarati, even her parents would not like me.
Really?
Because I'm not Hindi.
I didn't know Gujarati people face that. Okay, it can happen.
Yeah, but that's the first time I've ever encountered that. Because in South Africa, I guess the religions stick together more. It's like within the religions there's that hierarchy.
But the hierarchy is so subtle, isn't it? Isn't it subtle?
Not when you're within it.
Yeah, of course.
But it's not like... But it is more subtle in that you're not separated according to it. It's like I haven't heard of people not hiring other Muslims or something because they're from a different grouping. Yeah. Generally the religions will kind of stick together. It's like we'll discriminate against each other, but then it's us against on a bigger thing, it's the Muslims against everyone else, I guess, with apartheid and separation. And I think especially leaving, because even though it's been long enough for me to not have any ties to India, it hasn't been long enough for you to not... leaving your home country or your country of origin, it's a scary experience. And then when you go to... Like, you'll find that all over the world. There's Chinatowns and Little Indias all over the world, because you leave and you kind of...
Make your own world.
Yeah, not just to preserve your identity, but also because it's like the rest of the place is kind of against you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's there. That is there. I don't think I have processed my experiences of being a foreigner in that manner, I guess. Not yet, but it is difficult, you know. It's difficult, and as I told you, my family, for generations, they've been staying in the same town, same place. They can't relate to me. They don't understand what's happening in my life.
It's like that with us, too, because I grew up in a... I guess it's a bit different because of the increasing globalization that we've also had here in South Africa. But because I grew up in apartheid, and only then around other Indians, and there's still their separate schools for Muslims and separate schools, because that's what they grew up in. I think that generation also really struggles to understand us and our generation. The fact that we're around other races and the fact that we don't discriminate like they discriminate is something they can't understand, I guess. And the fact that other people respect us. I think they have this belief, this internal belief that we will be disrespected and people will disregard our religion,
Correct.
But they don't... I think it's just really difficult for them to believe that people can be tolerant of each other and respect. respect each other.
Mm.
Like in class, they'll cater halal, they'll cater vegetarian. Like generally everything that the university, like generally because university functions, they'll be it'll be halal.
Mm.
There'll be vegetarian options.
Mm.
Even though it's, I think in the class it's just, oh no, it's just me and one other Muslim.
Yeah.
They'll make sure that everything is halal.
Mm.
In Ramadan, everything, they like put out a thing, they have this awareness that people are fasting, so they made sure that the food they provide is in packages for us to take home.
Correct, correct, yeah. Hmm, yeah.
And I think it's just so difficult for the generation who grew
to
up
even believe
hate to comprehend.
Or trust.
Yeah, comprehend and trust that,
yeah,
that we live in a different, like our world is completely different to their world.
Yes. Right. I get it.
It's a scary.
The contexts as well. Are different.
Mm.
Our contexts are also so different.
Mm. Mm. I guess with the globalization aspect is where we find similarities as well.
Mm. Mm.
So interesting though to hear, like even though I'm South African, Indian, you're from India, we're different, we're like come from different backgrounds, different religious backgrounds, everything, we still have these similarities.
We
that
still
we
have these similarities. The certain stereotypes about Indians that I'm learning here, a lot of people, okay, as soon as they hear I'm an Indian from India, they're like, is that true? Do you eat a lot of spicy food? Do you eat a lot of hot food? And you know, initially when I heard that, I was like, interesting, that's what people know about Indians outside, huh? But slowly then I started getting irritated by it.
Yeah.
Like, well, not everything we eat is super spicy,
yeah,
and hot. But then I am a living walking example of,
yeah,
stereotypes. Like, yeah, I eat a lot of spicy food.
By the stereotypes,
but
it's
it is true.
No, what gets to me is the, do you speak Indian?
Never, that is not.
I've had the, do you speak Indian? Or it's always, do you, it's either that or it's, do you speak Hindu?
Not
that
even
I've Hindi. It's saying, do you speak,
yeah,
Hindu?
Yeah, yeah, that has happened. That has happened with me. Do you speak Hindu? People are confused between Hindi and Hindu. But these are the things that you realize after coming out of India.
Yeah.
Like, Hindu and Hindi, similar. Yeah, that's true. Those words are very similar. But I didn't realize until I came here.
I guess because in India, those distinctions create society, create who you are. Here, it's, I guess it must be so funny to encounter like someone who thinks that everyone in India will speak one language.
Yeah. Right. It's a huge country. I mean, look at your own country. You have so many languages. Why would you think any other country has one language?
It's really, it makes me think about, like, this conversation has really made me think about myself, I guess, talking to you about the languages and stuff and just the differences. It's like, huh, there's all these other countries in the world and there's so many intricacies and stuff. There's so many, then I think, misinformation that I have.
Correct. Yeah.
Like, whoa, the world is so big.
See, this is another stereotype that I've been hearing about Indians, are that they are really smart. Is that true? Is that true for you?
Yeah.
I mean, they say they are really good at maths and science.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not good at maths.
Yeah. The thing is, I think part of it is not that we're smart, but because of our families and the difficulties that they face, we're forced to push hard because we have all of that backing us, the family pressure and all of that. It's only something I'm realizing now. It's not necessarily that we are smart, it's that Indians tend to have that massive pressure on them to be that, and we don't have the room for it. But also, that's also, you see so many, I just realized now, there were so many people in my parents' generation that were left behind. But also because you don't talk about each other, you don't hear about them.
Mm.
You only hear the stories of the people who made it. I'm assuming there are so many people who didn't make it through the schooling system, didn't get past, didn't get the jobs when apartheid ended. But we just, you don't hear it.
Mm.
They, Indians won't do that. They won't talk about you if you don't, if you're not like the most
worthy,
successful. Yeah, they even they, if you have siblings that didn't do it, they won't, no one will know about them. They'll only talk about, and I guess it's also that what they choose to share is where the stereotypes come from.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that is...
I think Indians carry a lot of shame.
And, yeah, it's, that's our thing, right? Is it?
That we carry a lot of... colorism and everything. I think Indians just carry a lot of shame.
Okay. It's because of, I don't know, racism, are you saying? Like
Indians internal here racism, are... external racism. I think also part of the languages being lost is not necessarily shame, but trying to make sure your kids speak English before anything. Like losing the languages. I think, I know the modern, like, I think between my mother's generation and the generation just below her is where I've noticed that parents started parenting differently in ways that weren't Indian necessarily, and it was a lot more Western. Like, what really damaged me growing up was encountering other Indians who were ashamed of, it felt like they were ashamed of being Indian. Like, you ask, I think a turning moment in my life was when I was very young, grade R, like I was 5 or 6, and someone asked what my favorite food is, and people were talking about their favorite foods being pizza and pasta and stuff, and that's not, and then I felt like I had to assimilate. I remember once asked my dad if he knows what my favorite food is, and he said chicken curry. And my young brain felt ashamed of it being chicken curry. And these are other Indians that I'm talking. Like, I remember when I was very young as well, this one light-skinned girl in a friend group, she kept so casually, we were like, okay, let's stand in line in order of who's darkest, and like darkest to lightest. And I was the darkest.
Seriously?
Yeah, that colorism. And throughout... like, because I was in a very Muslim Indian school.
Oh.
And I'm growing up, like, until I was maybe 13, 14, I was, even though there were other races, I still didn't mix as much with them.
Mm.
And it's only when I was really, like, when I was exposed to other races that I started appreciating being Indian. Because Indians, especially the more middle-class Indians, carry a lot of shame about being Indian, and they want to be more Western, they want to Westernize.
Okay, I mean, I've heard about these things. Yeah. Okay. I get it.
Very
understand you. Oh. That sounds so traumatizing, though. You were standing in your...
It was a turning... Like
shades.
Until
of,
I was...
Shades
I think,
of Indians, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like that caste system reproduced in this... young 6-year-old, 5-year-old's mind. And I think until I was 15, 16, I wanted to be light skinned. I wanted people to think I was white. Because I remember the light skinned girl, her mother was once boasting. Now, this was years and years later. But I remember her mother was sitting in our lounge and boasting because in her daughter's high school, they thought her daughter was white. And that was seen as something like prestigious.
Really?
And that's also when I got it into my head that it's superior to be light-skinned and superior to have people think you're white. It's really when I was exposed to other, when I made friends from other cultures.
Yeah.
It was just so weird. It's when I started appreciating my own culture because they loved my culture more than my own people did.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, we got some nice things.
Yeah.
We got good food.
Food is one of the nice things, I think. Good food, yes, I agree. But I mean, everyone has good food if you look at it that way.
Yo, listen.
I mean, I love chakalaka and pap here. It's so nice.
No, the British, the Scottish, Germans, the Midwest Americans, their food kind of... like, I get it, their food sucks. It's a horrible British food. Scottish, European food, like other places in Europe, it gets better, but some...
they don't know how to work with their spices.
It's bad. What spices? They stole it from us and they don't know how to use it.
Yeah, of course they don't know how to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, sorry, chicken tikka masala is a British national dish.
Is it? Yeah. They talk a lot about chicken tikka masala.
I don't even know what chicken tikka masala is. Like, it's not a dish. Our dish. It's like a hybrid.
It's very... I did not grow up eating chicken tikka masala.
I never even heard of chicken tikka masala. But chicken tikka for me is like, you know, when you like smoke the chicken kind of, like you baste the chicken. It's chicken. It's not a curry.
Yeah.
Then I had chicken tikka masala. I was like, what is that? That's like...
Chicken tikka pizza, I read somewhere here. Then I like all of these things.
It's like smoked and it's charred, but it's chicken, it's like skewers. And I'm like, what the heck?
Like people say it's a chai tea.
What is chai tea?
It's tea.
Chai
means tea.
Naan bread,
did they say?
Do you know how much they say naan bread?
I have not heard that yet. Naan bread.
Yes. All the time. You'll see packages in the shops and it's labeled naan bread.
I mean, naan is not bread. In my mind, bread is a fluffy thing.
It's a bread. You know, naan. We do actually here, I haven't seen it here, but in Joburg, we do actually have, like, I say all of this, but what we have, it's naan bread. Even though it's not, I don't know why it's called naan, but it's like a loaf. It's fluffy. It's so fluffy. It's got the crust and everything.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Should have a little thing sometime.
I think we should do a session about just stereotypes of being Indian or stereotypes about India and laugh. That is something. That's where I think we intersect well.
I think it's also we just don't get the chance to. So it's so nice to feel like someone gets it and someone understands and have this shared moment.
Yeah.
It's healing. It feels healing. Thank you for healing me.
Oh my God. Welcome. Thank you for healing me.
That was such a moment.
It's so funny when you see it from an Indian perspective. Like, what is this bullshit happening? What do you mean healing?
Indians and healing. We are the new generation. We are doing it.
Yeah, the generation that wants to heal, I guess.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Having you in my space and chatting to you.
Yes, it was amazing. And Cluedo.
Oh.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, no, that has to be... Oh, no, she was just deeply asleep. That's why.
Okay, I think I should get going, right?